Welcome to This Week with State Senator Betsy Johnson. I am Michael Desmond. Senator, what has been happening with you over the last week?
We're handling a plethora of issues and sometimes working cases right from the beginning through to the end and never meeting the people face to face, actually only just talking to them on the phone. But to give you just a brief flavor for this week, handling cases about how different classes of people are treated differently with respect to the Oregon Health Plan and the CCOs and what to expect. I've got a situation I think I mentioned before that we still haven't brought to a resolution with a little kid who needed emergency dental surgery. The mom was promised that it would be covered. The kid goes to a dentist in California. And ends up, the mom comes back and it's not going to be covered. And so she's out a lot of money. We've got cases where there are prescriptions available for some people. For example, right now you can't turn on the radio without hearing ads for the Universal Men's Clinic. Safe to say that those drugs are not available to everybody that needs them. One guy can get a prescription, one guy can't. It's the same medicine, the same problem, but for different classes of people in different care architectures. And so we're trying to work through some of those. I've got a situation with a lot of Section 8 this week for whatever reason. This is housing that is subsidized through a federal program, and a situation where a woman thought that her health was being adversely affected by the presence of mold. And lo and behold, the landlords had let the roof go to the point that there was water in the walls and there was mold. The apartment has now been cleaned. Another case that I'm working on that has to do with Section 8 housing, where there was a quote-unquote non-refundable pet deposit due every month, which was ostensibly just a more rent. And the woman that was paying this was so desperate to keep her animals, her cats, that she ended up paying what, in my view and the view of the Northwest Oregon Housing Authority, is not a legal the leveraging of rent. And so the point of the story that I'm making here is that every time the phone rings, we don't exactly know what it's going to be. Plus, that's all punctuated with meetings, and a couple of them that deal with our military personnel. And incidentally, we're doing some cases with military, although we do those in partnership with Congresswoman Bonamici's office, a helicopter mechanic who's practically lost all of his hearing and couldn't get any response, and we've gotten him hooked up with the right people now. But I did two military events this last week that were really terrific. One of them was the change of command up at Air Station Astoria, where Captain Bruce Jones retired, and they do two ceremonies back to back, the retirement ceremony, the change of command ceremony, and then the retirement. And the other one was a dedication of a flag and flagpole for the 10th Mountain Division Association. And I learned so much about the 10th Mountain Division. I love going out there. They have a little grove of trees beside Highway 26 at a way station, where the 10th Mountain Division Association has planted trees in honor of fallen colleagues and comrades. And they put up a flagpole, and some weasel stole their flag. And so we rededicated a new flag this last weekend, but we can talk about that in a little bit. The point of the story is to really say we've got all kinds of events we do. We're handling constituent issues. We're handling meetings and being asked to work with state agencies, federal agencies, our congresspeople. It really is quite busy. Plus, as you know, we're getting ready for the start of a session. And I know that it is only the beginning of July right now, but we already have deadlines that are beginning to loom to get bills pre-session filed. And we're 6 months away from not only an election, but also the beginning of another legislative session. So there is no shortage of stuff to fill up an average day around here.
So you may remember The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson and his bandleader, Doc Severinsen. They used to do something called Stump the Band, where people would throw out a song and they'd have to figure out what it is. So I'm curious, has there ever been anything where someone called you with a question and it was Stump the Senator and you had no idea where to go? Has that ever happened to you?
I don't know the answer, but I certainly know a pathway. Sometimes the pathway is a direct line from A to B. Sometimes the pathway is A to B to C to D to E to F. I'm working on a case right now that involves a woman with a multiplicity of problems, none the least of which is she takes very heavy-duty psychotropic drugs. And one of the side effects of taking those drugs is your body basically attacks your dental structure, and people that take very heavy-duty drugs for a variety of mental problems end up having terrible dental issues. Their teeth fall out and rot, and it's terrible. This woman has so many different issues that trying to sort out all of the problems is really, really complicated. She is not married to her companion of 30 years. That presents a certain set of problems. She has family members that are not always worried about her best interests, managing her finances and withholding finances to get her teeth fixed. Whether the teeth are going to get fixed by the federal government or the state, where she has to enter the system in order to get the teeth fixed. So, yeah, there are sometimes the phone calls come or the letters come, and it's just, I don't know where to begin. And in some cases, the calls come, and it's like, what part of this really involves a state senator? I am asked occasionally to do some pretty amazing things. Sometimes I do them because that's just my nature. I'm going with a constituent to court in the next week, and it's a long story, but it involves something that I think he was unfairly cited for, and changes are already being made that were the subject matter of his citation, and I just don't think he's gotten a fair shot at the process. So in that particular instance, I'm gonna weigh in for him. But yeah, there are frequently phone calls where I just think, wow, if I pull on the wrong thread of this sweater, the shoulder's going to fall off, but I got to have a place to start. And I guess that's where I would just ask people when, and you've asked frequently on my behalf before, but I'll ask myself, when you are writing or calling with a particularly complicated problem, give me as much information to pick up the narrative as you possibly can. Case numbers, birthdays, Social Security. I destroy all of that stuff. We have grinders in our office, paper shredders, and we get rid of all that stuff so we don't retain it. But I need a place to pick the story up. And sometimes people will call in and they'll say, you know, Biff, my nephew. Well, Biff's real name is Alfred, and I need to know what people's real names are. As much information as people can give me to pick up the narrative, that's really what I need. And finally, just to conclude this, in some cases, as I said, there just is no role for a state senator. There are instances where there have been, for example, court adjudications, and the court says, you must register as a sex offender. And somebody says, well, I don't think so. It wasn't fair. I didn't like the outcome of the trial, so I'm not going to register. And the failure to register then compounds into new indictments because they haven't followed the dictates of the court. And I'm supposed to pick that up and fix it. And so there are just some instances where you can't get there from here. Now, I can find out easily what relief there is for somebody who is requested to file as a sex offender, because that has such a profound effect on a person's ability to secure housing or a job or any of the other traditional social interactions that we have as a society. There is relief after various periods of time, and there is new legislation that's being contemplated that would bring other relief. But if the court says you're supposed to do something and you don't do it, I can't unring that bell, no matter how good I am at handling constituent issues.
Senator, many times we've talked about how a bill becomes a law, but there's a lot that goes into this process that doesn't involve actually sitting in Salem and casting a vote. Part of that is these pre-session deadlines, and I don't really know what they mean, and maybe you can fill us all in. The first one is coming up on, looks like the 22nd of September, pre-session requests due. What does that mean?
I'll tell you exactly what that means. Let me step back in time a little bit, because I think putting this in a context will be helpful. The legislative process has become much more institutionalized now that we go to annual sessions. And so we are following a more, it's a self-imposed, but a more rigorous process that has a number of deadlines in it. In order to get a bill drafted, it has to go through legislative council. And let's start out with how a bill becomes a law. The first thing is really an idea. And those ideas can come from a variety of places. I frequently, when I go to schools, take a little piece of paper with me that starts out, there ought to be a law. And I ask the kids to tell me what things do they think need to be changed, where a law would correct a wrong or make something more understandable or fairer, or all the reasons that people would want there to be a law for something. And so people either approach me with ideas, and let me just give you some examples. Your lights on your car ought to be on all the time, but your lights ought to be on mandatorily anytime the windshield wipers are working. Or there are those people right now that want to get rid of the very high-intensity blue headlights. They're especially annoying at night. They're very, very bright. And so people will come to me and say, we need a law to do X, Y, and Z. Another one is about paying child support after the child reaches the age of majority, particularly if the child has no obligation to report back to the parent that money that's being expended for school is actually being spent at school. Those sorts of things. In some cases, I'll say, yeah, I think that's a great idea. You deserve an opportunity to have your idea discussed in sort of the marketplace of ideas, which is the legislature. Or I'll come up with an idea. Some of the ones that I'm wrestling with right now are to try to work in the foster care arena to make the foster care process work better than it works. And I'll give you an example we've talked about before, where consanguinity counts more than the best interest of the child, where they'll go find DHS, Department of Human Services, will go find a relative, regardless of how distant or how inexperienced caring for children, and place a child because they share a common bloodline, ripping a child away from the only family that the child may have known from birth to age 3 or 4. So the idea comes from somewhere. Then what happens is that the idea has to be put into bill language, and this is very complicated language to write. Not only does research have to occur to ascertain whether or not a new bill cancels out an old bill or makes an old law impossible to discharge, and so that work falls to very specialized attorneys who are in what's called the Office of Legislative Counsel. These are nonpartisan lawyers. I can't tell you the political orientation of most of them because they're so good at keeping their own politics out of the process. But they take the idea and they research how it fits into Oregon's framework of statutes. They find conflicts. They find problems. They tell the proposer that it's maybe in some cases unconstitutional to do what the proposer wants to do. But ultimately, they help the legislator try to craft an idea into language that can be debated, testified about, made explicable to 89 other people. And so the bill is produced, and I was working on one actually yesterday. This is a bill that has an awful lot of moving pieces. It started out as an idea in the Oregon Business Development Department, with the fellow there that runs what's called the Infrastructure Authority. This is that part of Oregon's Business Development Department that helps pay for sewer and water projects. And we have been wrestling for a long time about how do we pay for the requirement that diking districts have to make sure that their dikes and levees are certified and acceptable from a safety standpoint. It's a very expensive undertaking. And a very dumb bill by Congress has made it more complicated and more expensive. So the idea percolates. A lot of people talk about it. I take it down to legislative council. The bill gets drafted. And I now am, quote, in possession of the bill.
And before you go on from that point, just out of curiosity, when you go to legislative council, how much do you have to tell them? In other words, let's say I want to make the pug, the state dog of Oregon. Is it enough just to say that, or do I have to do some research? Do I have to give them more information than that? What do they require to be able to craft the bill language that you need?
It varies from concept to concept. Making the pug the state dog, very simple. Doing this bill to try to provide for state certification and a grant and loan program to pay for levy recertification, very complicated. It will affect the processes of several state agencies. It will require the legislature to appropriate money. It will state a process by which diking districts or other water maintenance organizations, drainage districts, can apply. What the repayment terms would be, what kind of collateral. I mean, it's a very complicated bill. In the case of the water resources and the OBDD bill for levy recertification, actually the agency had done an awful lot of research, and so I went in armed with agency-produced research and then also ended up with a drafter in Legislative Council who is an especially capable drafter. And she surfaced problems that we hadn't thought about that were subsequently addressed as the bill was being put together. But still, there's the very distinct possibility that we'll miss something. So as the bill arrived yesterday, a lot of people wanted it. And they wanted it for different reasons. The people at the Infrastructure Authority wanted it so they could read it to make sure that there were no unintended consequences. People at Regional Solutions wanted it because they have been working with a bunch of diking districts to try to figure out how do we solve this problem. Other partner regional solution teams wanted it because, frankly, I think that there's a little bit of wanting to lay claim to the credit for producing the bill, but I shouldn't be in the mind reading business. But anyway, there were a lot of people that wanted it. I was also delighted to find out that one of the people that was eager to see it is the Speaker of the House. And so immediately you're faced with the dilemma of how do you get the right language in the bill? How do you put together the right people to review it for its technical competency? How do you make sure that collaborators really are collaborating and one person isn't grabbing it and lapping up all the credit? How do you make sure that it is applicable statewide and that something that we're writing that has particular efficacy in, say, Tillamook County, where we maybe have 400 dikes and levees, would work in Multnomah County, where they're working on many fewer? And so I made the choice to begin widely circulating the bill to see if we could accomplish all of those problems. I did, however, lay down a little bit of a prophylactic against one or two entities trying to grab the credit, and we've set up a process by which an apolitical, neutral party will be involved in running the numbers for each one of the requests to make sure that what little money we have is equitably distributed and that we can work the multiplicity of agencies that have to come together to get us the money and the policy to be able to implement the bill. For the first time in my experience in the legislature, lay people, just ordinary Oregonians that want to watch the system, have access to exactly the same data and exhibits and testimony and analysis that the legislators do. And so as the session starts, I'd love to have as a guest on our show the people that put that program together and have them walk through a tutorial for OLIS that we can actually advertise ahead of time and have people listen so that they are completely up to speed on all of the things that OLIS can do. It can dip back into prior sessions and dredge up all of the same, the testimony, the analysis, the fiscal implications. And so maybe we do an OLIS tutorial sometime so that people have all the tools at their disposal to be able to follow the procedure of the legislature from Tillamook or Astoria or St. Helens just as though they were sitting in Salem. My point is that pug as state dog, very simple. Recertifying levees and dikes and paying for it, very complicated.
So, Senator, we've talked about the deadlines for bills to get done. The first one is September 22nd. That's when you need to get your idea or your concept to Legislative Council. Then on December 5th, that's when they're going to get the drafts back to the legislator that gave them the idea. And then you have to get those filed by December 19th. And then that's the deadline for which all the bills that were done before the session started have to be done, right?
That's correct, and they all begin to get into the queue, and about that time also, in early December, the governor's budget has been published. The governor has a requirement to have his budget out by the 1st of December. And so by early December, all sorts of stuff is happening. These cutoff dates for bills, the governor's budget, of course, will disclose the governor's priorities, because all of the bills that we're talking about are generally policy bills. These are bills that change the law in some significant way. Or minor way. And some of these have huge fiscal implications, so they have to be funded. That's the Ways and Means process, and that's where I serve in the legislature, is in producing a balanced budget. But the governor will come out as these bills are being finalized, and you're getting a sense of how much some of them are going to cost just early on. They'll have a more detailed fiscal analysis if they make it through the legislature. But you begin to see what the legislature will be grappling with. I think this governor is going to have a very aggressive budget. He's going to have funding in it for the special public works, that is the area that will fund this dike and levee business. There are going to be requests from the institutions of higher education. I find it funny that they all ask to be released from state scrutiny and state oversight, and all of them get their own boards, which has worked out. I mean, they now have their own boards, but they're all back again asking for more money. We don't want your oversight, but we do want your money. My point is that this governor, and just adding up some of the stuff that I think he's going to be asked to fund, the Oregon Innovation Program, there may be another request for Connect Oregon. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars. And then we also will have to take stock of what difficulties have been laid up for us by virtue of the failure of Cover Oregon. There's going to have to be some backfill, I'm fairly confident, as federal money disappears out of that program. So the governor's budget will be an interesting document. So the policy bills, many of which have fiscal implications, will start to materialize in December. The governor's budget, we then come into session in early February. By then, the presiding officers have met with all of the committees. They've tried to look at the workflow. They've tried to look at the magnitude of what bills they know about. We come into session in early February. Hearings commence immediately. And then the regular process is followed, but also with the opportunity up to an absolute drop-dead deadline of additional bills. So it's a train that leaves the station somewhat slowly and builds up to this crescendo by the end of June, where we're actually getting ready to adjourn. But along the way, many deadlines and many opportunities for people to weigh in as they become aware of some of the concepts that are being contemplated in the bills. The Ways and Means process takes a lot of testimony and information in the early part of the session. And then as we begin to understand what sort of the shape of the universe is by virtue of requirements by state agencies for funding and what of the policy bills are going to make it through the entire legislative session and become law, what the fiscal requirements of those bills will be. And so our work generally ramps up. When I say our work, I mean in Ways and Means. Our work generally ramps up after the May forecast, because quarterly, as the legislature is either in session or out of session, we're receiving information about how our economy is performing, and those are the revenue forecasts. They are done through a series of steps and reviews by different bodies that are put together by the governor or put together by the Office of Economic Policy. And so all of that continues so that we have some rough idea of how much money we're going to have available to spend. We get both forecasts about income tax collections, lottery projections, how the economy is performing, what are the threats to the economy. And so all along this whole continuum, we are taking the pulse of Oregon's economy to see how much money the legislature will have to dispose of.
And the next one of those is coming up August 27th, those being the revenue forecast. That's the next time you'll get that. So out of curiosity, when someone comes to you with an idea that they want to have a bill or a law How important to you are the three numbers, 16, 31, and 1? How important is that in your decision whether you're going to move forward with whatever they brought to you?
Absolutely dispositive. And to tell people what you're talking about, 16 is a majority in the House, in the Senate, 31 is a majority in the House, and the 1 is the governor has to sign it. And so frequently people will come to me with a bill and or an idea for a bill, and I'll sit with them and say, based on what I know about this legislature, there is no possibility that this bill will get passed. Or there is no possibility that the governor, as I know his political philosophy, no possibility that he would sign this bill, even assuming that it makes it through the process. And I think most people, when they listen to a reasoned argument, say, okay, I don't like what I'm hearing, but there's no point in producing a dead bill. It costs money to have legislative counsel write these bills. It takes human energy and intellectual capital to write them. And if the bill on its face isn't going to go anywhere because it is so, the idea is so out of sync with the philosophical orientation of the Kitzhaber administration, why torture everybody to go through the process? For the disappointment of either having the bill get written and then never heard by a committee, or get heard in a committee and die immediately. So I don't take all comers. And in some instances, I've told people that want to insist on having an idea come forward, I'm not the guy to do this, but here's somebody that I think is more philosophically aligned with your concept. I've actually said to people, you know, I couldn't vote for the concept that you're bringing to us. And so I'll try to help people get their ideas into the system, but it doesn't always mean that I'm the right guy to bring it forward.
And sometimes you think that it's going to pass and it doesn't, for it could be any number of reasons.
Oh, absolutely. For all of the stuff that we already talked about, maybe the chair of the committee just flat doesn't like Betsy and wants to make sure that my bill doesn't pass, even if it's a good bill. That happens. And so there are sometimes reasons that bills don't make it through the process, that it's just inexplicable. You don't understand why a good idea didn't get traction. Sometimes at the end, there is enough horse trading that a bill will get caught up in a horse trade and get killed. Senator Bruce Starr and I put forward a bill to try to get some money to repair Cornelius Pass Road. And that bill, Senate Bill 1502, died rather inexplicably, although political fingerprints seem to be on the coffin lid. So there are any number of reasons that a bill won't make it. Some of them purely policy, which is good, and some of them less honorable reasons.
So as we sit here in July, how much work is going on, not just with you, but with your fellow legislators, passing bills around or concepts around and trying to see if there's support for it? Is that happening as we speak?
Less right now. I think as we get closer to some of these deadlines, more will occur. I've had several conversations about bills already. Some of them have been brought to me by constituents, and I've at least felt out the people that own the bill. There's going to be a technical fix to a very complicated bill that we passed last session. And I have felt out whether or not there is any appetite for including my constituents' fix in that bill. We haven't had a chance to thoroughly discuss it because this particular legislator was lucky enough to get to go to Brazil to watch the soccer games. And so as soon as he's back in the United States, I'm going to meet with him personally. But the point of the story is, I think, less conversation now as when we get closer to some of the deadlines, although some of it is occurring right now.
And that's going to do it for this week with State Senator Betsy Johnson. You can reach her via email at questions, Q-U-E-S-T-I-O-N-S, at BetsyJohnson.com. You can also follow her on Twitter, like her page on Facebook, or plus one her on G+. Whatever means you use to communicate with Senator Johnson, make sure you include a phone number. And Senator, what are the best phone numbers to reach you?
In Salem, 503-986-1716. And in Scappoose, 503-543-4046.